As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Buffalo Beat, and this one is a tad different because for the first time since the NFL Combine in 2020, Matthew Fairburn and I are recording this in person. Feels great.
Yeah, I forgot what it was like, to be honest.
I'm going to have to look at you now.
It's mostly been out of convenience for the last few months.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, as the cadence of the show went into off-season mode and you know, we were recording from the comfort of our own homes, but now that we're back on the scene more often every day, we're now recording in person again, and we're going to be at games again and all that fun stuff. We won't be in person for every show, most likely. We've got some new wrinkles to the show this season, trying to make it better than ever for folks. But yeah, it feels really good to be back in person. Unfortunately, that means you now have to look at me in addition to hearing my voice, but and the listeners soon will have to do the same.
That's a tease.
A little bit of a tease, as we say in the business. But yeah, it's fun to be back. We're actually recording this as we're about a half an hour from practice number four. Mm-hmm. So the in-stadium practice, you won't get any nuggets from that in this episode, but you get the ambiance. You can picture the scene as fans are flooding into Highmark Stadium to watch the Bills in practice number four. But a lot has happened already leading into this practice.
Yeah, it's been an eventful / slightly uneventful start to the camp, only because we're still in this kind of middle ground of they're still trying to get the protocols going. You know, last year there was a much longer ramp up period because they didn't have the spring workouts, so they didn't get into pads until later on in a training camp. They're still not into full pads. So it's basically the same thing as those spring workouts we saw in May and June, but still it's good to see them consecutively and to see how guys are evolving from time to time. Now, just as a reminder, those practice guidelines that were there from last year, they're still in place. So we can't really tell you who's lining up with the first, second, or third team. We will be able to for the fourth practice, but we won't be able to for what we saw over the first three practices. But we can tell you who's looked good, who hasn't, you know, some interesting notes and nuggets along the way.
And the good news is, from that standpoint with the guidelines, only one starter isn't back.
Yeah.
There's not really competitions for starting jobs. I think everybody knows Levi Wallace and Dane Jackson are sort of fighting for that number two corner spot, and you can imply what that means for their practice reps. Of course, you know, with Deion Dawkins and Ike Bucker on the COVID list, there's been some shuffling on the offensive line. But as far as intrigue on the depth chart, this is camp number eight for me in the lowest amount of intrigue on the depth chart, I think. The focus of camp is a lot different now when there's not three, four starting jobs up for grabs. Of course, farther down the depth chart, you get more of that that intrigue for who's going to make the team and how everything's going to shake out. But I think that's part of why the guidelines haven't been all that restrictive, because people know what the starting lineup of this team looks like.
Yeah, for the most part. You brought up the cornerback job. We'll get into that a little bit later in the show. But I think the proper place to start is who has been probably the best player on the field through the first three practices. And Bills fans will love to hear this. It's Josh Allen. He has been on an absolute heater since the practices began during team drills. I mean, I don't know about you, but last year I remember in that ramp-up period, Josh started off pretty slowly. And I don't know if that was based on all of the time off, but he didn't. There was nothing from those first maybe like six or seven practices that made me go, all right, this dude is about to make a major leap forward. He looked more like his second year. But that's why these practices are sometimes so deceiving, to where you don't really know what you're going to get in the season. But at one point in camp, he turned a corner. I remember he was just on fire in one practice. And then from that point forward, he was spectacular and he carried it on into the regular season. But for all that said, what he did last year has carried over into the first three practices. And I want to say there's a pretty strong correlation between ending those spring workouts and then really not taking time off. Like he went and worked with Jordan Palmer out in California immediately after the spring workouts. It was maybe like a 4 or 5 day window where he wasn't doing it. And he was out there for a month. It was like June 20 something to July 23rd, I think it was. And practice for the Bills started on July 28th. So, I mean, he was basically fine-tuning himself the entire time he was away. And I think it showed up.
Yeah, it's, as you mentioned, last year, and really every year since he's been here, the starts to camp have been slow. And as a practice player, he's been up and down. And we're only 3 days in, so there's still time for the ups and downs to happen, and they inevitably will, as they do with every offense in the league. But this is as good a start to camp as he's had since he's been here. It's as good a start to camp as any quarterback has had since I've been covering this team, which, again, not, you know, really saying a whole lot comparing him to the guys that were here before. But it's interesting to watch a team that has a legitimate franchise quarterback practice. And I know we've talked about this before when we would go to joint practices, and you see so much of one team and how it looks when they're practicing and quarterback competitions and dividing reps and how disjointed Bill's practice could be at times over the years. And then we'd go to, you know, in 2014, going to Steelers camp.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I was just about to.
I remember sitting there thinking, like, wow, this is what an NFL camp looks like. like when you have a quarterback and an offense in place and you're just trying to fine-tune things before the season. Same with, really, the Panthers a few years ago with Cam Newton. And that wasn't peak Cam Newton, but still, there's a different air about practices when there's a guy in charge and the pieces in place on offense. It's more productive. Like, camp is much more productive when you have a really good quarterback. And Josh Allen is very much in control. He's an extension, really, of Brian Daboll in a lot of ways. You don't hear as much from Brian Daboll as you would previous offensive coordinators, because Josh Allen isn't making as many mistakes, and he knows what to do, where to go with the ball, and he's in control of this offense. He has some ownership of it. So, you know, again, how much that translates to the regular season is always hard to tell with training camp, because last year I didn't really see signs of what he was going to become until the regular season started.
Right.
I think he did have a practice in the stadium where he was like 38 for 46 or something, and it was like, oh, okay, like this offense is starting to put things together. But to get off to this type of start, and Eric Wood made this point on Twitter, usually the offense is a little bit behind in training camp just because it's more reliant on timing and things of that nature. But the offense has been ahead of the defense, and it's not a bad defense. It's not the best defense in the league, but it's not a bad group. It's a talented secondary, but this offense seemingly has been one step ahead, and they have a lot of weapons on the field.
Yeah, it's just been continuity left and right. I mean, from really the only thing that has – the only two things that have changed from the end of last year is that sub out John Brown for another receiver, and Cody Ford is right back there in the mix for a potential starting job. But other than that, it's basically everybody is the same. And you can tell that continuity. I mean, he hit Cole Beasley with a deep pass on day two, right down the middle of the field that split the safeties. It looked awesome, and it was just perfectly in stride. And really, he played with the safeties too to move them off their spot. And that was an encouraging sign of perhaps what is to come. And just the way that he's kind of established a rapport early on with a guy like Manny Sanders. I mean, that I think is going to be one of the more under the radar things. And maybe it won't be by the time camp is done. But I think Emmanuel Sanders is going to have a big say in this offense. Not like Stephon Diggs type of say, but like I think about what John Brown could have been in the offense last year. And, you know, he went through all those injuries. It was a tough season for him by all means. But I think what Emmanuel Sanders does incredibly well is so perfectly suited to what Josh Allen does. And that's attacking that intermediate area. Like, I remember there was a route where he just broke a cornerback off in one-on-ones. It was on the indoor practice on day two. And the cornerback was left like reeling it was a good like 4 yards of separation on a route that was only about 8-9 yards. And that's just the type of thing you get with him because his footwork's impeccable. His run up to the breakdown is awesome. That's separation is his thing. And then when you throw the deep route stuff on top of it, like this is a guy for New Orleans last year. And keep in mind, New Orleans was not a downfield passing attack last year. 27% of, or almost 27% of his routes last year were go routes. So if you're looking for someone who can help, you know, help that soften the blow of losing John Brown and still offer those things that you're looking for potentially with the intermediate passing attack and giving you another thing to keep attention away from Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley, I think Emmanuel Sanders, even at his age, is a really strong fit for what they want to do.
What I like about Emmanuel Sanders mixing into this offense is that it helps them reinvent themselves a little bit.
Absolutely.
It makes them a little bit different than they were last season. Of course, you don't want to change too much of what made them one of the best offenses in the league last year, but part of what keeps offenses at the top of the league is the ability to make minor adjustments and stay ahead of the adjustments that opposing defenses are going to make. And when I talked to June Jones after the Bills signed Emmanuel Sanders, he had both Cole Beasley and Emmanuel Sanders at SMU. And the first thing he mentioned, you know, I asked him, June Jones is one of those guys that he's coached wide receivers forever. And, you know, a lot of the option routes and stuff Cole Beasley runs, he was, you know, running those in the USFL back in the day. And he said, having both of those guys in the slot will probably be the most dangerous alignment that the Bills can have. And I think that's not really something John Brown allowed them to do.
For sure.
Like you said, Emmanuel Sanders can be what John Brown was with the deep routes, and you can line him up on the boundary, but his ability to play both is really, you know, going to be an interesting wrinkle for this offense. The idea of having Gabriel Davis on the outside and Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley inside with Diggs on the other boundary, that's a really, really good four, right? Yeah. It's a better four than they had last year, in my opinion, especially assuming Gabriel Davis can make a bit of a jump. So they ran 10 personnel more than all but one team in the league last season. I would expect them to be right up near the top again as long as these guys stay healthy because, you know, a lot of people have asked, and I'm sure you get the question from the fantasy crowd a lot of, you know, Gabriel Davis or Emmanuel Sanders, which one? for fantasy purposes, it will be hard to pinpoint a lot of weeks, I think. But I think they're going to be on the field at the same time quite a bit. And I think that's what's going to make this offense a little bit different than it was a year ago. And I'm curious to see how defenses adjust in general to this offense. But that Emmanuel Sanders alone, I think, gives them a different variety of looks that can help them stay ahead. And I think a strong quality of Josh Allen, we've seen it in the first few days of practice, thinking about the fact that he helped Stephon Diggs lead the league in receiving last year when they had basically 2 weeks of training camp, no preseason, no mini camp, none of that. How quickly he got on the same page with Stephon Diggs, I think speaks to who Josh Allen is as a person. And he already seems like he's on the same page with Emmanuel Sanders early. So I don't think there should be any concern. You know, I think, you know, timing and stuff like that matters maybe a little bit more with a guy like Sanders, but, you know, given where, you know, that he's going to be moving around a little bit. But the fact that he was able to do it with Diggs last year and he's going to have more of a run-up with Sanders, they look pretty good so far. Yeah, and so I think there's a lot to be excited about with the passing offense yet again, and be interested to see what Brian Daboll has cooked up, because we know he's not one to clock out early. And I'm sure he spent a lot of the offseason trying to figure out how to take the – it's a new challenge for the Bills as a team and certainly for their quarterback and their OC to say, all right, this worked. You had this breakout year, this amazing season, MVP caliber year from Josh Allen. How do you stack another good year on top of it? It's a huge challenge in the league. Even the best quarterbacks have down years. So it's a lot of pressure, but I like what it looks like early on.
Yeah, as do I. And it was funny. Before the first practice, Sean McDermott spoke with us, and he effectively said, that big roar, if you hear it in the background, Josh Allen just ran out on the field for the first time in front of fans since last year. So there's that. But I don't know how much you can actually hear through the microphones. But as I was saying, the first day of training camp practice, Sean McDermott, he was like, well, you know, it's gonna take some time for Allen and Sanders to get on the same page and establish that camaraderie, the chemistry, the rapport, whatever you want to term you want to use to associate with it. But that same practice, the Bills, Allen spotted something. He snapped the ball and immediately trusted Sanders to win the route, just tossed it up with like a one step drop, just tossed it up and perfectly placed. Sanders won against the defender, brought it down. It was an excellent pitch and catch. And it's like, okay, well, it looks pretty good right now for what they're doing. I do think, I know you brought up the fantasy element, and yeah, we both get asked that a bunch. I probably favor Sanders a bit more than Davis, because I think Davis's playtime percentage was a bit inflated based on John Brown's injuries last year. Now, that said, it probably goes up a bit this year, but like, I don't know. Both are going to be involved, like you said. This is a 10 personnel team who doesn't really have an answer at tight end right now. And if it goes to show that their tight end continues to be inconsistent, as Knox has even been at the start of this camp with some drop passes, but also some good plays too, then we could see a lot of both of those players. But I do really like Sanders' skill set with what Allen does. I think even more so than what Gabe Davis does. Gabe Davis is really good at go routes and big time routes. And that was a lot of his route percentage last year. And I really like him when plays break down, because he's got an acute awareness of where to go, how to shield a defender, ways to maximize a potential rep. And that's why we saw a lot of red zone targets last year in the end zone when things started to break down. But yeah, I think in the interim, it might be putting a little bit too much on a fourth round picks plate from a year ago. Whereas, you know, you have this veteran guy that they've been trying to get, you know, just
signed him to good money.
Signed him to good money, tried to trade for him, tried to sign him before, and finally got him. I think he's going to be a staple.
Yeah. What you brought up about Allen, you know, finding him on that one play in practice, there's an element of Josh Allen as a person, like I mentioned, that allows him to get up to speed quickly with guys. But I do think there's an element of him as a player that allows it too, because he's extremely quick to trust. Mm-hmm. He's not afraid on the field. It's part of what makes him, it's part of what's made him really good. It's part of what made him great last season. It's part of what made him a little up and down his first two seasons, is he will try absolutely anything on the field, and he will trust his guy over anybody else. He's not a guy that needs, you know, Stephon Diggs brought this up quite a bit last year, that Josh Allen is not like Tom Brady or like some of these quarterbacks who say, you need to be right here at this time, and I need to count on you to be right there at this specific time in the route. Otherwise, I'm going to lose confidence in you. Obviously, that has served Tom Brady exceptionally well. He's a perfectionist, and you know, timing and rhythm are everything in his game. Josh Allen's game is different, and he's okay with freelancing a little bit and, you know, figuring things out on the fly and playing a little backyard football. It gets him in trouble occasionally, but he also has enough talent to get away with a lot more than most quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a stronger arm than Tom Brady and some of those timing quarterbacks have. He's, you know, able to break tackles and run away from defenders. And so I think that's part of who he is as a player and as a person, that he's not going to, you know, it's not like Emmanuel Sanders is an outsider and he needs to earn Josh Allen's trust. He came in, like you said, as a highly sought after guy by this franchise for a handful of years. And Josh Allen said, oh, this guy's a 12-year vet. I'm going to throw him the ball. Like, he's a good guy. He fits in the locker room. I'm going to throw him the ball. Josh Allen trusts all of his receivers. You know, he's very quick to trust in that locker room. And I think that's why he threw so many touchdowns to so many different players last year. And it's why, you know, the idea of, you know, Stephon Diggs coming in last year, why wouldn't he trust him, right? I think when you go through your first few years with Kelvin Benjamin and Zay Jones and Andre Holmes, when you've got Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, and Emmanuel Sanders, you're like, yeah, these guys are pretty easy to trust. And so, you know, he will put these guys in positions to make plays. And I think that's, you know, what made this offense successful last year. And it's hard to envision the passing offense at least taking a huge step back, as long as, you know, I think the one element that's somewhat interesting is how they'll handle crowds. And
yeah,
you know, they've mentioned that.
Yeah.
I thought Josh Allen was pretty honest about what happened in Kansas City and how that kind of got to them. Cole Beasley said the same thing, that they weren't ready for that moment. And it was a loud Arrowhead Stadium, but it wasn't a full Arrowhead Stadium. It'll be louder if it provided, you know, that fans are in attendance 100%. So that'll be a wrinkle that they have to deal with. But so far, so good as far as the offense is concerned.
Yeah, for sure. And one last point about people who are still kind of like on the fence about Emmanuel Sanders, and maybe look at his stats last year. Like, sure, look, you can see what he did in New Orleans, but also realize that Drew Brees really didn't throw a pass often longer than about 4 or 5 yards, and that Taysom Hill was basically locked on to Michael Thomas the entire time as a one-read guy. But if you watch the All-22 stuff on Sanders, it's all very promising. So I think that's why the Bills were so excited to get him and acted as quickly as they did.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's maybe switch it over to the defensive side because we've spent a lot of time on offense. And the defense, they have done a lot this offseason. The defensive line was their focal point basically throughout the entirety of it. They restructured Mario Addison. They restructured Vernon Butler. They signed F.A. Obada. They drafted Greg Rousseau. They drafted Boogie Basham. And so now they drafted A.J. Epenesa 2 years ago. So now they have a lot of players to choose from. But what I find the most interesting about what they did this offseason with those guys, and maybe even how they've discussed them in the early stages of training camp here, is using them in different ways and lining them up and down the line of scrimmage. You know, yesterday being Friday, Leslie Frazier spoke with us before practice and talked about the versatility of F.A. Obada and using being able to use him on the inside and the outside because of his unique skill set and his power and he's got 97th percentile arms for the position. They're 35 and 5/8, I believe, which is borderline ridiculous. And then on top of that, you've got Boogie Basham, which we've heard about all the time. They said maybe Greg Rousseau could do it. They said it about A.J. Epenesa. And I'm sure it all kind of leads itself into this way.
Addison did it last year, too.
Addison did
it. Times.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you think about it, and you also think about the way that the NFL has gone, where, you know, the Bills are on the front line of this because they are one of the highest percentage 10 personnel teams in the league. And, you know, teams are constantly in nickel defense as it is. So it almost kind of feels like that early down talk, and there was a lot of talk early on about Star Latulule as well. And, you know, even Leslie Frazier said, oh, you got that early down guy. I don't even know if it's an early down thing anymore. I think it's more of a niche role to where you need to have all of these guys who are multiple along the front to be able to affect the passer. And I think they're moving that way rather than have, you know, stock three technique, stock one technique, and defensive end like they did in Carolina in the past. And they're kind of evolving in that way. And I think it's super smart.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, defensive theory conversation because a lot of teams, you know, will find ways to manufacture pressure with linebackers, with different fronts and things like that. The Bills are still mostly a four-down team that wants to get pressure with four and occasionally will send Matt Milano or Tremaine Edmonds or a defensive back. But that was the biggest thing to me when they made those draft picks. And I know it wasn't really the plan to go with Rousseau and Basham back-to-back until, you know, Basham fell to them in the second round. But it does give them the ability to mix and match and create matchup problems all over the place. And like you said, there's not that many guys left on this defensive line that play just one position. And I think that's a cool element of what they have going. To me, there's a lot of pressure on Eric Washington to make this work. You know, he's a highly thought of defensive line coach, former coordinator, been in the league a while. I think he has enough pieces to create a competitive and effective defensive line. Last year, they had as much money invested in that position as any team in football, and they didn't get the results. Now, I think they have some more guys where Eric Washington has had input on them being here. And now it's about getting something out of that young talent. And I think Greg Rousseau, Boogie Basham, those guys should make an impact in year one. They won't be finished products or dominant players, but they should impact games. Greg Rousseau is so long that he should make a few plays that turn heads. You know, they should find ways to get more pressure on the quarterback. I think you can trace a lot of their defensive problems in the AFC Championship game back to not being able to get into the backfield. A lot of their problems on defense when they popped up were for that reason. And the game, the best games that they had were when Jerry Hughes was really getting after it, or, you know, they were pushing the pocket. So as much as I think Ed Oliver taking another step or Hughes not losing a step are, you know, really important, because those are probably their two best one-on-one pass rushers, the collective and how those guys are used could be just as important. And that's, you know, on Eric Washington to develop these guys and get them ready. And it's on Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier to come up with the packages to figure out how to best use these guys. And I think there could be, there's so many combinations you could go through because of how many different positions some of these guys can play.
Yeah. And the only time that I think you're going to absolutely need that locked in one technique guy right in the middle of that defense is when teams are kind of showing their hands. You know, they'll probably mix Star in a bit more, but if you want to, you know, jumpstart your pass rush, you're going to need guys who can get after it a little bit more. So that's why I think Harrison Phillips might have a tough time making this team. Same thing with Vernon Butler. These are two guys that do not really get pressure all that much, and they can't do anything with Star Lotulelei because he's locked in with his contract. But
it's why I almost feel like his return
is overrated.
Might
now
be a little bit overblown.
Yeah, it is. It is and it isn't.
Yeah, it's like,
because they missed him.
They did, but there are, and it's a good, it's a necessary piece, because you're not going to change the entire philosophy and thinking overnight necessarily, and you still need a guy like that. But the effectiveness of this defensive line might rely more on everything else that they do and how they mix and match there. So I don't know. I think a lot of it will depend on how good he is too, right? How close he is to what he was before he left. So, or before he opted out. So I think that's one of the most important positions on the team, because I think it can help cover up any other flaws that they might have, which the one flaw in defense they might have is on the back end with their cornerback depth.
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny, you brought up it wasn't their plan to draft Boogie Basham and Greg Rousseau consecutively. But what was interesting was they were still linked to other defensive linemen, and not even defensive ends. Like, I remember there was a few reports that they were pretty interested in, I'm hoping not to blow his name, Levi Onwuzurike from Washington. And he was more of a defensive tackle, a pass rushing defensive tackle, but a defensive tackle all the same. So that is like pretty interesting. And it was, and he ended up going in the second round. That might have been the tier they were looking at. So maybe they did intend on going pass rusher or defensive lineman all along. So that in the very least was interesting. Now the fourth practice has begun, and we are allowed to tell you who's on first and second team today. So first team was Greg Rousseau, Star Lotulelei, Ed Oliver, and AJ Epenesa for the Bills, and their offensive line was Darrell Williams, Cody Ford, Mitch Morse, John Feliciano, and I think Spencer Brown. Did I see, or was it Bobby Hart? One or the other. But yeah, so we're in practice four now, so we can tell you that. But regardless, the defensive line conversation that leads it in. Rousseau, Epenesa, these are all going to be highly, highly important players to what they're doing. Now the cornerback job is interesting. Levi Wallace was with the ones for today's practice, and he is not going to go away anytime soon. Like, he is such a good practice player, and it's probably the reason why he has been able to hang on as long as he has and do all these different things. And he has developed. He's gotten, you can tell, he's gotten bigger. He's gotten stronger. He looks different from the first year we covered him. But now he's got a legitimate young competitor in Dane Jackson, which they invested a draft pick in last year. A late one, but he has been a bit of a flash player. So from that perspective, you want to see more consistency from him. Like, and it's, you've also seen the ups and downs at the first part of camp too, right? I mean, he's made, he made an awesome play on Duke Williams, got super physical at the catch point and broke the pass up. And Duke Williams has, you know, Randy Moss some people in his day. That's kind of his calling card in training camp practice, but Dane Jackson didn't allow it. But then there's other times where he's in one-on-one drills and he, you know, makes the wrong read and gets turned completely around. So that's the middle ground here, which is why, you know, Levi Wallace is looking like a pretty strong competitor early on to win that job outright. But it is early and the pads haven't gone on yet. But still, Levi has been just this steady guy all the way through.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. I wrote about it the other day at The Athletic. In recapping the second practice, is that going back to the spring and in the first few practices here, there's still a ways to go, but the highs might be higher with Dane Jackson at times. He'll, he, you know, gets some great pass breakups and, you know, can be really aggressive on the ball, but the lows are lower with him too. And Levi Wallace is a lot more consistent so far. And they know what they're getting out of Levi Wallace when they put him on the field. So early on, that's my lean for that spot.
Same.
It's one of those positions where I think both of them will need to be on the field at times, and both of them will get playing time. And it's possible Dane Jackson continues to develop. He's still a young player, and that development can happen quickly. It could happen over the course of the next 2 weeks. You know, that we've seen that happen before. It could happen by midseason, where he starts to really, you know, level out and become more consistent. But there's a reason Levi Wallace has been in the lineup as often as he has since he made this team as an undrafted free agent a couple years ago. I think he is a consistent player, somebody they can count on. They like his steady demeanor. But it still strikes me as a position that isn't quite a strength for them. And it's not, I don't think Levi Wallace or Dane Jackson starting is their, is a problem necessarily. I think Levi Wallace is a fine number two cornerback, and having Dane Jackson right behind him or as a 1B to his 1A is pretty good. It's not a bad situation. It's after that that I have some serious questions about this depth chart. And at the moment, I'm thinking it's a five cornerback 53. Because the only five I see as absolutely worthy of it are Tre'Davious White, Levi Wallace, Dane Jackson, Taron Johnson, and Saran Neal. Behind that, they have a sixth-round pick in Rashad Wildgoose. They have undrafted free agents all over the place. Cam Lewis, Elijah Griffin, Nick McLeod. You know, who have all at times played well. Cam Lewis has shown promise since, you know, he was with this club as an undrafted free agent in 2019. But you're an injury or two away from one of those guys having to step in. And that is a tall task for somebody that wasn't drafted or whatever else. But it's really interesting when you look at this depth chart. I mean, their first pick was Tre'Davious White all those years ago. He's one of the highest paid corners in the league, one of the best corners in the league. And after that,
they've neglected it.
You know, Taron Johnson is the next highest pick. So it's really interesting how they've built this cornerback group. It shows a lot of confidence in, you know, Sean McDermott came up as a defensive backs coach, and they feel like, you know, Leslie Frazier was a defensive back. They feel like they can develop talent at that position, and they've done a good job of it. But, man, they're living on the edge a little bit, I feel like.
They have been forever, too.
And the depth is important. You know, how often do we hear Sean McDermott and every other coach and GM in the league say you can never have enough good corners? The Bills don't have enough good corners, in my opinion. Yeah. And it's possible, again, that development can happen fast, and they could have uncovered, you know, a good player. I think Elijah Griffin has looked pretty good. If Elijah Griffin were playing the way he is and there were a few veterans in front of him, I think it would be a great situation. But the fact that Elijah Griffin might be a couple turned ankles away from starting in a game against Patrick Mahomes or, You know, the Titans with A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, that strikes me as a problem. And we are probably nitpicking a little bit because it's really the only glaring problem on this team is the depth at cornerback. You could probably say a little bit of uncertainty on the offensive line, too. You know, will that group step up and be a better unit than it was last year, even though they have all the pieces back? But to me, it's depth at cornerback that makes you think, like, is that going to work as constructed, or do they need to add? And I really do feel like adding to that spot would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I think a major reason that maybe they've neglected it as much as they have is because of the trust in Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde to be able to bail those guys out.
And Tre'Davious White, right?
You've got and Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, yeah, too, you, because of the zone defense.
Yeah, you have five really good cover players in that you just mentioned. The two linebackers, two safeties, and Tre'Davious White. I was talking to Robert Mays about this yesterday. It's that they, because of their scheme and because of all of those guys, they think they can get away with a little bit more than most teams at number two cornerback, and they're probably right. You know, Robert was mentioning a lot of other teams are constructed to be really deep on the back end and manufacture pressure up front. The Bills are a little bit different in that they feel like they can manufacture coverage at times, and they have the bodies to pull it off for the most part. But it's still, you know, there were teams that picked on Levi Wallace last year. There were teams that took advantage when, you know, guys were hurt. And the fact that COVID will still very much be in the equation this season, that's where I think the depth is a problem. You may sit here and think, oh, you're being overdramatic. A couple of turned ankles sounds like a little far-fetched that they'll have to immediately dip into, you know, these deep reserves at corner. But how quickly one position group can be put on the shelf for a few days with COVID, it makes it, it changes the conversation in a little bit, in my opinion. So I think they'll probably add. I've thought that, you know, going into camp, that it would make sense to find a veteran or maybe to upgrade when roster cuts come down.
They do have $10 million in cap space right now, and if they were to cut someone like Vernon Butler, they would be able to save an additional almost $3.5 million to release him. So that would put them right in the realm and still maintain flexibility, some flexibility to issue a long-term extension to Josh Allen if it ends up happening.
Yeah, so the fact that they left themselves a cushion and have kicked the tires on some corners makes me think they're just waiting for the right fit and the right spot, you know, to add. And this is the time of year where that can happen. You know, there can be guys that pop up on the veteran market, you know, and I don't know who it'll be or when it will be, but it strikes me as something that needs to happen. And I feel like maybe it's an injury that causes them to say, all right, yep, now we got to do it. But like I said, there is always the possibility that some of these guys develop quicker than expected. It can happen in a matter of weeks where, you know, or a few plays in a preseason game give the guy the confidence to turn a corner as a player, no pun intended. And, you know, maybe that happens. And Saran Neal is kind of an interesting part of the equation too. He had a big play in practice the other day, intercepting a pass and running it back. He can play all over the place. I don't think he's a guy that they want to have to count on defense necessarily. And he's more of a, you know, a movable piece in the secondary. But if they have to turn to him, they're not hurting too bad there. Like, I think he's a pretty sure bet to make the roster. But
yeah,
finding an experienced corner that can provide them some depth, I think, is probably the on the top of the to-do list as, you know, Brandon Bean and his staff tinker with the roster between now and opening day.
Yeah, with all due respect to the Zach Ertz trade happening for the 780th time this offseason. But yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think it could be a problem. I think Taron Johnson is still, you know, that great play notwithstanding, is still just an average cornerback, nickel corner. He's a good run defender, really good run defender. man-to-man coverage and even zone coverage sometimes, it catches him because he hesitates. So that's going to be something that...
And he gets hurt a lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
last year he was okay last year.
He gets hurt quite a bit and because of how he plays. So again, another reason why depth I think will be important there. And I think they know that. You know, rarely are we pointing something out that they haven't probably thought about a million times themselves. And it's probably just a matter of waiting for the right opportunity, the right price. And it's probably the smart way to do it so that you can get a lot of these young players the reps to, you know, you probably know what you're getting out of a veteran, right? You know, a guy that you can plug in and maybe knows the system, has a history, would be the type of guy that you want to look for. And in the meantime, these young corners are getting a lot of reps against really good receivers and really testing themselves. So I think it's not a dire situation, but one to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. All right. Practice is about to get into full swing. So real quick before we go, maybe some lesser knowns that have stood out to us to this point. I've got a handful of guys that I think have done a nice job. You know, I look at F.A. Obata as someone that has really stood out to me on the defensive side. You know, that we mentioned his versatility. Also, a sneaky amount of guaranteed money on his contract. His contract is 1 year, $1.5 million, $800,000 of which is guaranteed. Whereas with Daryl Johnson, who it would probably be his roster combatant for a 53-man spot, they can cut him and save basically everything. So I think Obata is one to keep an eye on the defensive side. On the offensive side, Jake Kumerow is someone that has really stood out to me. And I know Isaiah Hodgins was the darling of the spring, but Kumerow, not only has he made himself available on offense and has looked good running routes, and you know, he even got in some pass receptions with Josh Allen yesterday, almost came down with a ridiculous catch, a one-hander with a defender draped all over him. It barely got away from him at the end, but he won the route and the ball even hung up a little bit in the air. And on top of all that, the guy is a four-phase special teams guy. He told me yesterday after practice that they've been working him at all four: kickoff, punt, punt return, and kickoff return. And that is extremely valuable, especially when you're talking about this team, because they put an emphasis on it with those types of players. So, you know, it's going to be a battle, and he's going to have to beat either Hodgins, Stevenson, or McKenzie for a spot. But he's someone that has caught my eye early. What about you? Who you liked?
Nothing gets this coaching staff and front office hot and bothered like a good four-phase special teams.
That's what I'm saying.
It's you hear it from a lot of coaches. These guys absolutely back it up. It's why in the 53-man projections, you'll see guys like Tywan Jones make the team because Brandon Bean called him an elite gunner. Well, that's a pretty good clue. Saran Neal is a stud on special teams. Tyler Matakevich is a stud on special teams.
And especially if they're going to cut Daryl Johnson, they're going to need some other guys to step up, like a Kumerow, for instance,
yeah,
or an Andre Smith.
It's such an interesting part of the game. There's, you know, everybody has grades for, or not everybody, but, you know, Pro Football Focus or whatever. Everybody grades and ranks all these positions, and quarterbacks, receivers, even defensive players, ranks the defense. There's stats for everything. Doesn't really happen on special teams.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, there's special teams tackles that can give you a clue, but I found it funny, you know, writing a story last year on Tyler Matakevich, and Heath Farwell was like, I had two guys on my list. You know, Tyler Matakevich, one of the best special teams players in the NFL. And it's like, who would ever even know that other than, you know, to hear it from coaches? And he said Tywan Jones was right behind him. It was like a 1A, 1B. He wanted both and got both. So yeah, it's a good call on finding guys. It's why Andre Smith is somebody I'm watching on defense. He's a guy that's been really involved on special teams. I just found it interesting that they traded for him last year in the middle of COVID. You know, we weren't expecting a lot of roster movement on cutdown day, but that was one where it was like, wow, they intentionally sought this guy out, and special teams was a big piece of it. I mentioned Elijah Griffin and Saran Neal, two corners that I think have played pretty well. Marquez Stevenson is talented. He is a talented dude. He'll need to win the punt and kick return job, I think, to make the team. And the biggest problem I see him facing is you know, you mentioned Kumerow is playing well. Isaiah McKenzie is playing really well through three practices, and he can return kicks as well.
And he's the WR5 gadget guy on this.
Yeah,
offense.
Brian Daboll loves him. He's a great guy in the locker room.
Oh, yeah.
I know they didn't commit a lot of money to him, but man, is he playing well. So Stevenson, to me, I think they should find a spot for him because I think it might be hard to keep him on the practice squad. I could be wrong about that. Maybe they can sneak him through. But if he pops a punt return or makes a big catch in a preseason game, that's going to be harder to do than it was last year. So they have interesting decisions to make at wide receiver. And, you know, we talked about Hodgins a lot in the spring, rightfully so, but we also qualified it by saying, you know, we'll see what happens in training camp and when pads start to come on. He has definitely faded into the background early in camp. We'll see if he can figure it out as things get rolling. But I think Kumerow, McKenzie, and Stevenson have kind of established themselves at the bottom of that wide receiver depth chart.
Yeah. All good names to keep an eye on as we move forward once they get into pads. I think sometime next week. I think that's their plan. Anyway, so not only are we recording in person for the first time since 2020, for the first time ever, we are recording when Matthew Fairburn is a father, by the way.
And that's true.
Congratulations, my
friend.
And
Joe B. is a husband.
I am.
Not mine, but he is a husband.
So congratulations, my friend. We recorded our episode, you know, before everything kind of happened for both of us. But yeah, it's been definitely a life-changing summer for the two of us, but we're glad to be back at it, I think.
Yeah, an eventful summer, to say the least. And so if I'm a little bit softer, less of a cynic, perhaps, you know, a bit more positive and upbeat, you know, perhaps it's fatherhood that has changed me. Who knows? We'll see. And if I'm grumpier than usual and more negative than usual, it's probably because I'm not sleeping. So be on the lookout for, you know, just cut me some slack is what I'm saying.
All of a sudden, you're just going to be crying in front of the microphone one of these days. It happens to all of us. All right, so we're going to go watch practice. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Buffalo Beat. We'll be back at some point next week once the Bills get back to practice. But until then, thanks for listening. Head over to theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat to jump in on our subscription offers. You won't want to miss those and to read all of our coverage over at The Athletic and all of John Vogel's coverage on the Sabres and all the Heichel drama and basically everything. That's theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time. See ya.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.